Unmute, unmute.
Do what?
Oh. That's free. Anyway, Norm Alcoholic. Want to thank Christy for asking me. It, swear to God, I wanted to call in sick today. Anyway, it's just been, for the last week, I've kind of just been, God, I sound like a man. I haven't slept. I've just been like walking around like a zombie. But what AA has taught me, no matter what I'm going through, I've been talking to people I haven't talked to in a long time, and I'm updating him because my friend and my boss is dying right now. And I know, just to try and be of service to other people, because, I can't just sit in my own head and think about, her dying. I went to the hospital. I've been surrounding myself with the staff where I work and going to meetings, talking to newcomers, reaching out, seeing how, everybody else feels. And I'm going to tell you, if you're new, that wasn't me almost 39 years ago, because I didn't give a rat's ass, back then. My sobriety date is May 27th of 1985. When I walked into the detox, I did not want to be sober at all. It was 1985. It was cocaine, Quaaludes, and Southern Comfort. Who wants to get sober when you're, when you have that mix? And, I weighed 155 pounds. I was jaundiced. I had hepatitis C. My hair was bleach blonde. It stood up straight up in the air. I was a huge punk rocker when I came into AA. And I went to this hospital and I thought, oh, yeah, I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I was clueless of these meetings and sponsorship and doing this. And I didn't understand anything. I was there for 30 days. I remember I was there for 2 weeks. They say don't get involved in your first year, but it was co-ed. I don't believe that there should be co-ed, detox or sober living. Anyway, that's where I met everybody. And I remember running out of that hospital with 2 weeks of sobriety thinking, I can't do this. I can't stand the way I feel. I don't like these emotions that are coming up. I can't control them. I don't want this. But in the back of my mind, I didn't want to drink again. I'm one of those people that got on my hands and knees and said, God, please help me, because I was dying of alcoholism, and didn't even know what was really going on. I tried to kill myself many times. I have big emotions. Seriously, they're huge. Always been like that, And I went through that detox. They, send you to meetings, and I went to meetings. I hate wearing Spanx. Went to meetings. I have a picture of when I was new. So this is how I looked. I had chains wrapped around my neck. I had dog collars. I had piercings everywhere. Made sure you saw them, and stomped around the rooms, was in bondage and latex. And I had these dresses that I had chains. It was in my bondage boots, and I would just stomp around, and nobody would sponsor me when I was new. Nobody. I was huge, bleach blonde hair, and I'm going to tell you something. I worked at Pacific Telephone as a customer service rep. You know, that's how I got into that detox. But, you know, I got out of there. I didn't have a car. I didn't have anything. I didn't buy anything. I just had a suitcase. And I got sober in Hawthorne. I lived in downtown L.A. on Normandy and Wilshire, where all the cockroaches live. And that's where I lived. And I got off the bus and I went into my apartment and I was like, what am I going to do? You know, I didn't know you could change liquor stores. I went to the same liquor store every single day. And then this particular day when I got out of detox, I went to this liquor store to get a pack of cigarettes. And this man looked at me and he said, oh my God, what has happened to you? And I was like, what? He says, your eyes, they're so bright. And I was 30 days sober, 30 days sober. And, you know, the only two friends I had left was Debbie and Avis. And when I got out, you know, they welcomed me with a six pack of beer. I have no sponsor. I don't think I have a God. And I don't really want to be sober. And I looked at them and I said, I don't drink anymore. And I don't know where that came from. You know, and I had to go back to work, you know, I hated my job more than life itself. But I'm going to tell you something. When you take Quaaludes, especially Quaaludes, because I can drop some. If you take Quaaludes away from me and Southern Comfort and cocaine, and now I have nothing in me. I am not a pretty sight. You know, I don't say this because I don't think I'm bad or anything like that, but I'm violent because I can't stand the emotions that are coming up, you know. And I'm going to work. This guy's really trying to help me that I met in AA. So he moves in with me and I put holes in the wall and I frighten him and he moves out. You know, I don't blame him. You know, he leaves and I'm going to work. I'm getting on the elevator. I'm looking the way that I look and people are calling me, you know, complaining. And I was like, I'd hang up on them constantly. Or I'd say, I really don't care. I never gave my name. And I was a nasty person. You know, people pissed me off. And this was before computers and everything. And so this one lady really gave me a hard time on a Friday. And I disconnected her phone on the weekend just to piss her off, you know. That's and I stomped around. The only word I knew was the F word. I have to tell you, there was nothing ladylike when I walked in here in 1985. I didn't know how to dress right. I didn't know how to talk right. I didn't know how to act right. You know, if you're new, I want to tell you something. AA has taught me everything that I know of how to act like a human being, number one. Not attack people like I used to, and to be comfortable in my own skin, I always say 98% of the time. That is what AA gave me. You know, I was dying inside. I was 3 months sober. I called my friend. I said, I have to drink. And he said, take the bus to my house. I'll buy you a bottle. But I want you to go to this meeting. And I want you to hear this woman talk. So I went to this meeting and Rachel Lara was the main speaker. She was 8 years sober. And that woman was a prostitute from Hollywood Boulevard. And she told my story. I wasn't a prostitute on Hollywood. I forgot to take money. I'm nothing, you know, that big. And she was so kind to me. You know, she was so kind to me. And I said, you know, can I have your phone number? She said, I want you to meet me at this meeting. It was the Wednesday night meeting with there's 1,000 white people who look like they have it together, right? And I'm Mexican and I still don't feel good about myself. And so I go to this meeting. I have this little t-shirt on that says no cocaine stamped on it. I have my piercing showing, my dog collars. And I'm standing in line, but I got to tell you something about this group and these women. Nobody ever came up to me and said, are you new? Nobody. They welcomed me with open arms and loved me back to health, you know? And my sponsor said, I want you to go around the room and shake, you know, all these people's hands. And I hid in the bathroom because I have no conversation. I don't know what to say. My sponsor said, read the newspaper, you know, because I had no idea what was going on. And I asked that woman to sponsor me, and then she became a vicious person. I have to tell you, she was mean. She didn't care about how I felt. She cared about what I was doing. And so I couldn't really whine to her. You know, I came to AA with no education. I went to the seventh grade. That was the only schooling I had. You see, I started drinking when I was 13 years old. I was 14 or 15 when I went to a program called Synonym. It was in San Jose, you know, and that's, I remember going to AA at that young age, but I couldn't hear it and I just couldn't get it, you know. My first drink was a blackout. I lived in a trailer park with my grandmother. My friend Leslie lived in a trailer park, and so she bought a bottle of wine. Of course, I downed all the wine. I blacked out, came to, and I was popular the next day at school, if you know what I mean, because I was raped, and things happened. That was my first drink. Now, you think I would, you know, say, well, I'm not drinking anymore. No, I just went home, threw up, and did it again. And I just learned how to just run the streets out there. I didn't want anybody controlling me. You know, I was raised in foster care. My mom was killed when I was 9 years old. And I hated God and I hated everybody. You know, there was a lot of abuse that happened when I was growing up. And I thought I would never, you know, I always felt so, you know, dirty about myself, felt so bad. I scrubbed myself with Clorox in the tub thinking that maybe, you know, I could clean myself up. So I really needed a drink. And I'm a runaway. And back in the olden days, the police didn't, you know, they took running away very seriously, because I remember I ran away and then hid up in the closet and they were looking for me. And my grandmother, you know, I went to go live with her, never knew where I was because I was jumping out that window. You know, she thought maybe if we moved to the east side of San Jose, which was the projects on King and Road, that maybe I would get away from those people in Reno, Nevada. And I'm telling you, I can fit in. And I saw what was going on. I got a 1960 lowered Impala, tuck and roll. My hair was blue black. So funny. Used to rat it, you know, up here, and wore false eyelashes. I was pretty good at that. Black eyeliner. I shaved my eyebrows off, which I'm suffering this time from it, and painted those eyebrows on. And I was often running with those people, you know, doing reds and yellow jackets and beer. I'm a downer. I want to be out. I don't want to be happy and free. You know, I don't want any of that. I just don't want to feel anymore. So I'm just running around the streets with those people. I got arrested many times. I was in juvenile hall more times than I can count. On my 18th birthday, I tried to steal a car. And it's hard when you're drunk to steal a car because I fell out of it. And I was arrested on my 18th birthday. And that was just to take me on a vicious cycle of in and out of jail. I've done a lot of time, but it doesn't mean I'm a tough broad. It means I don't know how to do things. You know, I'm not very slick when I'm robbing you, or I'm not, you know, burglarizing your house or stealing your car. I'm not, you know, I'm not good at that. So I'm in and out of institutions. And my poor grandmother just didn't know what to do with me. And I don't know about you, but when I was locked up, I pen palled with this guy. He was in Soledad, because that's what you do. You're bored, so you write all the guys. And he got out. I met him, and we robbed my cousin's next-door neighbor. And I was once again in front of the judge. And this is the same judge. And he said to me the last time, he said, Norm, if I see you in my courtroom one more time, you're going to the penitentiary. Well, that didn't really frighten me because I met all my friends, you know, in jail. My boyfriend's mother was in jail with me. That's where all my people were. And there I was standing in front of him again. And thank God that these people said, if you return everything, we won't press charges. And I did. And I knew San Jose was not good for me. You know, I was getting into a lot of trouble there. And we moved to Sacramento, which, you know, isn't that great either. And I'm 18, 19, I can't remember. I have no skills. I didn't go to school. Like I said, I don't know how to work. I did work at a massage parlor, but to interview, you know, wasn't much to do. But, you know, I worked there and there was, I love the nitty gritty. You know, I think I always say this, my favorite job was at the porn shop on Skid Row in Sacramento, because that's where you meet all the interesting people, you know, out there. And I kind of really liked it. And then, you know, I tried to, like I said, prostitute, but then, you know, I don't know, I'm drunk and I don't take the money, so everything's for free. You know, but I was introduced to Synonym, and at Synonym, it was mostly heroin addicts. And I know this is AA. But when I got out, you know, I was, you know, I shot heroin and sold my soul. That's all I can tell you. You know, I was a little girl out there doing that and being taken advantage by two pimps, you know. But as long as I got what I got, and thank God my best friend got out of prison and she came and she took care of me and detoxed me. And, you know, I worked at all these silly little jobs. And I remember I was on unemployment, I think, or something, food stamps. I don't know what I was on. And Pacific Telephone was hiring. This was in 1978. And they were looking for a customer service rep. I don't like people, but they were looking for a customer service rep. And, you know, I went on the interview. I swear to God, I had to go to, you know, train and all that. And, you know, I got the job. And, you know, I took a pint of Southern Comfort with me to work and drank it. And I was the nicest employee because you could have whatever you wanted, but I would never write it down. You know, I was happy. And Sacramento was, I got married. He was gay. I got married. I really thought that would change my life. It didn't. I was gay. So, you know, how was that going to work? You know, both of us. And our honeymoon was just awful. But anyway, you know, I wanted to move to LA because that's, you know, punk rock just came in and that's the scene I wanted to be in. So I transferred, you know, to LA and I was out in Sunset Boulevard, you know, with the Whiskey, the Roxy, slam dancing in the pit. And I'm little, I'm short and I'm little. And I would come to with bruises all over me. And I know I had a good time if I had bruises. I have to tell you, the type of drunk I was is I've been thrown out of cars. I just, you can never predict what's going to happen with me. I cannot just take one drink. I can't just take one drink because if I take one drink, one pill, one snort, I'm off and running, you know. I needed to make money, even though I was working. I thought I'd become a drug dealer, so I bought an eighth of cocaine because my thing was is I was going to sell it and I was going to make some money. It was gone the next day. So I made nothing from that. And, you know, towards the end of my drinking, I was in West Hollywood. I was, you know, at the gay bars. I was cute back then. I was falling out of DJ booths. Towards the end of my drinking, nobody wanted to be around me. That's what I'm trying to say. I came to AA, I was 29 years old. I stopped counting when I turned 60, so I don't know how old I am, and don't tell me. So, I lost my train of thought. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Okay. Nobody wanted to be around me, so this is what I did. Towards the end of my drinking, I was at the Piccadilly Apartments. I'm 155 pounds, like I said. I'm sitting in the foyer, which I learned that word when I went to college, and I would wait for somebody to come in because for me, it was a disease of loneliness. I was so lonely. I had no more friends left. You know, and I would hit the streets, go to the same liquor store, come home, go to work. I remember my job said, if you're sick one more time, we're firing you. And I said, okay. So I went to the bar to have one drink. Came to the next day at 1, not knowing where I am and thinking, oh my God. But then someone said, since we were in the union, just tell them you're an alcoholic and that you need treatment. And that's what I did. And that man, I have to tell you, that was on the phone, when he said to me, are you an alcoholic? I said, no, no, I'm not. And he said, I'm going to let you come here and it's just going to be our secret that you're not one. And that man saved my life when I went, you know, when I went there. And my journey began by doing things that I didn't want to do. My sponsor made me get a driver's license because I didn't have a car. And I didn't care, but she made me. And I got a car and I had to take new people everywhere. She said, I want you to get your GED. I said, I don't need my GED because I already have a job. She said, I didn't ask you how you felt. You're going to do this, that, and the other. And I got my GED. I think I was 32 years old, you know. And my sponsor always said, you can do whatever you want as long as you just walk through the fear. Just walk through the fear, Norma, you know. And I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I know that I hated these people calling me and complaining. I didn't really, you know, like that. And so I just tried different things, you know. I went back to college. I had to start English. I had to learn what a noun and a verb was. And I got straight A's all the way up to English 101. But what happened was, is I met, you know, they say meet boy on A. By this time, I'm into men. Okay. So anyway, there was this boy across the way. There's me. And I knew it would, I don't know if it was God's will. He was so cute. And so I stalked him and I got him. Excuse me. I didn't know he was 19 or 20 years old. I was 33, but I felt we were on the same, wave. We connected. And anyway, I got pregnant. I don't know about you, but I don't like kids. I do not like children. There's nothing at 4 years of sobriety. There's nothing motherly. I am not a mother material. And they tell you the people in my home group just were like, pregnant, you know, they were afraid. And you know, and I knew I wanted this baby more than anything. And my sponsor said, I will always be there with you, but please don't think you're moving to Orange County. Please don't think you're going to live in a white picket fence and get married. I want you to know you'll be doing this all on your own. Can you do that? And I said yes. And the women in AA helped me raise that boy. You know, he's 33 years old. We have lunch every single week. He calls me and we have like the best relationship that a mother and son can have. It wasn't always like that. Like I said, I was not a good mother. I, you know, I will say I never beat my child, but I always say, screaming, yelling, verbal abuse is just as bad. And I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. And I remember I went to this women's meeting and I shared, because I believe you're as sick as your secret. So I'm gonna tell on myself because I don't want to drink. I'm going to tell on myself I need to change his behavior. And I was able to take the path of that, of changing that behavior with my son. He was 5 years old in kindergarten. The nun who was in my home group called me because he went to Catholic school and said, your son is extremely angry. I was like, I don't know why. Like they called in a psychiatrist. I mean, like, oh my God. And, you know, from that, my little boy had some disabilities, you know. He was ADHD. He couldn't sit still. He couldn't he couldn't focus. He couldn't make any friends. And as a mother, I had to do things to support him and help him and get the funding that little boy needed. And you know, my son was 12 years old and I had to send him away for a year. And I think that's so hard for a parent to do that with a child. But I knew I wasn't doing him any good. And he went to a group home. And I'm going to tell you that changed that little boy's life. You know, I went back to college. Like I said, I wanted to be a marine biologist because I liked the little fishies in the ocean. That's how I picked my careers. And so I took a marine biology course, and I really loved it. But I didn't know you had to learn to scuba dive to be a marine biologist. No one told me. So, you know, I went to school for that, and I panicked in the pool with all my gear on because I'm claustrophobic. And I remember calling my sponsor, and she said, Norma, the next time you do that, you're just going to talk to God. You're taking God with you in the water, and you will be safe. You know, and what I remember is when I was on the boat in Channel Islands, with all my scuba-doo gear on, with all these people that I didn't know, and I looked at them, and for the first time in my life, I didn't feel like I was less than them. And I didn't feel that I was better than them. For the first time in my sobriety, I felt okay. It lasted 10 minutes, but I had hope that it was there. And so, you know, they make you go in the ocean. I know the sharks are only after to eat me, nobody else. So I'm holding my hand on my respirator, looking up, and I'm telling you, like at the fifth dive, I was in the ocean, you know, just dilly-daddling around, and here comes, I thought it was a shark, but it was a barracuda. And so you have a partner. I don't know where my partner went because I left him. I just hauled ass and got out of that water, and I thought, I don't want to be a marine biologist. And then I thought, well, I really like construction hats, you know, wear those construction hats. So I took a leave of absence from work and I went to construction school in Anza, California. All right. The only thing that I couldn't pass was the jackhammer. I was not that butch. I couldn't pick it up and, you know, jackhammer the cement. But I, you know, I was in with a whacker, you know, at that time, and like this, all, you know, and fingernails all fell off, and I got a job. I got a job in El Segundo when they first started the treatment plant. I don't want to be a construction worker. I was there. I was there 3 months. I fell in the rebar because you got to walk on the rebar with the, you know, those, oh my God, those things and those planks and, oh, and I kept falling. I thought, I don't know, this is not working. So I went back to Pacific Telephone. And you know what the thing was? It took me a long time. It took me over 10 years to really go to work, be of service, and help others. And that's what I did. And I got promoted, a girl with seventh grade education. And I got promoted and I worked with maintenance and repair with the service techs in East LA. God, I loved going to work there. It's wonderful. And that's what I did, you know. Before I retired, I was there for 28 years and I retired and I thought, well, maybe I want to be a real estate appraiser. So I went to real estate appraising school. I don't know math. I couldn't do it. And I just kind of struggled. I'm going to tell you, I was unemployed for a long time. I struggled. I didn't know what, you know, what God's will was. And I'm going to tell you something. I never say no, because you don't know where that no, you don't know what's going to happen when you say yes. You don't know where that yes is going to take you to. And so I just said yes, you know, to work as operation manager for a home health care agency. You know, I learned to say yes to work at a law firm. I don't know how to Xerox. I'm not kidding. They taught me a lot there. I had no idea. And I said yes. And I was only there temporary. And the girl who was on maternity leave wanted to come back sooner. So she came back sooner, which means I was unemployed again. So I'm back on the computer. I see this job. It says house manager wanted for a sober living. I'm 30 years sober at this time. I thought, I ain't working there, you know? And so I just kept going, in a little voice said, go back and apply for that job. And I went back and I applied for that job. And I started working at Casa Bella Recovery Services in LA. And I knew that was my niche. I knew that's where I belonged, you know? I love those women so much. Not all the time, but most of the time. And I thought, oh, I could go to school, you know? I'm 68 years old. I went back to school at 60, a little over 60 years old. I went to school for a year to be a drug and alcohol counselor. And that's what I do now. I've been with this company for 8 years. And the great thing is that I know my job and I know AA. They're separate. Just because I'm talking to and trying to help these new girls doesn't mean that, well, I'm doing that, so I really don't need to go to AA. You know, that's bullshit. That's not what it's about, you know? And right now it's just, I'm just trying to be of service right now at that job. And whatever they want me to do, I'm really kind of setting aside my ego. You know, I have clients, I have sessions with them, I meet with them, but I'm needed because of what's going on at work right now. I'm needed at a different place. And it's not the job that I do, but I don't care. You know, I'm there just to try and help out. And that's what AA has taught me to do. You know, I've done a lot of step work with all the forgiveness with everything that happened to me when I was little. Because if I wasn't going to forgive, I wasn't going to be able to love another human being. And I didn't want to be a victim anymore because I was such a victim. You know, when I was new and even well into my sobriety, and I was able to go back to grave sites. I was able to go back and forgive my grandfather. I sat at his gravesite and I knew that something was right. My grandmother was there and I talked to her, made an amends to her, and I'm in the car and there's a little hummingbird that just comes. My window's rolled down and the hummingbird's just humming right here. And I knew that was my grandmother, because I owed that woman so much of everything I did. And I feel that I was able in some way to make an amends to her, you know, especially working with the elderly and really trying to be the granddaughter that she really wanted. You know, I went to where my mother was buried and forgave her for dying because I hated her so much and blamed her for so much. You know, I got her a headstone because we were poor. And I knew that's what my grandmother wanted. So when I go to Sacramento, she has a headstone. She's not just full of dirt. You know, I have a good life if you're new. I have to tell you, I'm not the same person that walked in here. I don't feel the same. I don't act the same. I'm not a whore anymore. That took a long time, though. But anyway. Like, I tried to explain to my sponsor, well, we met in the elevator, you know, God's will, and or this. It took me a long time to stop acting the way that I was acting when I was out there, you know. But I have to tell you something. When I came in this meeting and just saw everybody here and the love of the newcomer, this is what AA is about. One alcoholic talking to another, one alcoholic trying to let the other one know it gets better. It gets better. So anyway, thank you for my life.